Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Luke Smith, and this is the Autosport Podcast. Charles Leclerc continued his impressive qualifying form in 2022 by scoring his fourth pole position of the season ahead of the Spanish Grand Prix in Barcelona. Despite spinning on his first run in Q3, Leclerc bounced back in emphatic fashion to grab pole position ahead of Max Verstappen, setting up what could be another tense fight between our early season title protagonists. Carlos Sainz delighted the Spanish crowd by taking third on the grid for his home Grand Prix, while Mercedes also had reason to be cheerful as George Russell and Lewis Hamilton took fourth and sixth place respectively, both noting the improvement in the car thanks to the Barcelona updates. Joining me to go over all of today's action in Barcelona is Autosport's F1 editor Matt Hugh. Matt, how are you? And I must say your Aston Villa retro shirt has been quite a talking point in the media centre today.
Thank you very much. Yeah, first time I've been asked for a selfie in the F1 paddock. I'm quite a fellow journalist, not a fan. And yeah, got a couple of comments and quite pleased with that. I was worried. I had to ask you for a sense check last night. Am I going to look sort of mildly cretinous in the paddock walking around in a football jersey? But I thought a retro one was borderline.
It's very tasteful, I must say. I think it works.
The only sort of downside is it's quite a thick weave, a dense fabric, and in the scorching temperatures we've had today, it's not been well ventilated in this corner of the press room, let's say.
No, it's been a very warm day in Barcelona, and it made for a very interesting qualifying session. But as I said in the intro, it's another pole position for Charles Leclerc and Ferrari. It does seem to be that car works better on a Saturday than it does on a Sunday. But that lap from Leclerc, when you spin it on your first run, you've got one shot, you've got to make it count. He wrung every last tenth out of that car, it seemed. What did you make of his pole position lap?
That final 10 minutes of Q3 was this 2022 season in a nutshell. If you had to say to someone who, you know, was away in the Arctic from Friday in Bahrain to where we are now, you go, Leclerc, brilliant over one lap when it matters, proves he's still got a driver error in him, and Verstappen hobbled by Red Bull on reliability every now and again. It was a real good little microcosm of the season so far. It was a good lap. It's one of those things where I've rewatched the onboard and thought, absolutely nailed that. But Leclerc himself goes, I think there was a couple of moments on it, not necessarily losing time, but a couple of things where it wasn't quite perfect. And he was asked in the press conference, you know, is that right up there? Is it a good one? It's that usual spiel of, yeah, I was pleased with it, but, you know, I'm not going to stick my neck on the line. But yeah, a mega lap. And rather than take it tentative where he made the mistake, he did that sort of more exciting thing to watch, is basically find a limit. Right, I know where that is. I've overstepped that, so I'll dial it back to 99.9%, and he smashed it. He didn't lose time through there looking at his microsector. So, yeah, mega effort.
It's quite a Gilles Villeneuve approach, isn't it, towards driving. Maybe he got some inspiration for driving the 3112 a few weeks back at Fiorano. That'd be some
absolutely. He's done his historic car runs in reverse, hasn't he? He's dropped his first lap like the Niki Lauda car, and then he's done a bit of a Villeneuve at the end.
Fantastic work from Charles Leclerc. But as you said, that spin, it was a driver error. Talk us through that. What happened there? And is this going to count against him in the driver ratings? Does that go down as a major error?
I'm going to say no so far, but okay. we have like strict guidelines. So when you know there's complaints about driver ratings from the drivers that do read them, we can go, well, sort of, I'm going to bail myself out here by referring to the code and that we do have certain parameters they fit in. So I'm undecided yet, but we'll have another look. But it was, I did ask him, and I not that I was trying to give them an excuse, but you look at, you know, how easily that car spat signs off in Miami, obviously Leclerc spinning it over the curbs and Imola, like, is this F175? Is it a bit of a knife edge racer? You know, what was a slide in a previous generation car and a ground effect Ferrari? Is it now? That's an instant spin. And he said, no, driver mistake. Interestingly, Sainz said, yeah, it is a bit like that. But Leclerc said, no, it was a basic mistake. And it was sort of a bit of a case in point, or a bit of a repeat of Imola, where he's got the bit between his teeth, turn 14, that, you know, that first left-hander through the 90 degree each way chicane. He was just too greedy over the curbs. The rear end goes, and yeah, he just can't catch it. It didn't quite interesting is that came off his Q2 run, where I think he was only seventh in Q2 because he did one run on a U set of softs. So whereas that might have been an advantage in the race because we're expecting several stops tomorrow, he's now been neutralized, because when he span and corrected, he obviously stamped on the anchors to stop beaching it into the gravel and causing a red flag, and that locked up all fours and flat spotted. So his tactic that worked really shrewdly in QT is now been equalised against Verstappen. But yeah, driver error that one. But you know, depending on what happens tomorrow, he still be in the top echelons of Autosport's driver ratings.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Max Verstappen there, P2, 0.3 seconds off pole position, which, given how close it's been between the top three teams so far this weekend, that's a fair old margin. But he was hamstrung for that final run in Q3 by a DRS issue. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, so originally it seemed like a power issue, because he starts his final flying lap, like, yes, this is climax of Q3. And particularly because Leclerc, sort of to make amends from his errors, like, I'm not taking any chances getting stuck in traffic. So headed outward, sort of, you know, 3.5 minutes to go, I think it was. Everyone else left it a bit later to sort of get the track at its best. So yeah, Verstappen's coming in, right, this is it. You know, who's going to get this sort of quite important pole? And then he backs out of it completely at turn three. And when... Yeah, I think most of us, when we first watched that, and maybe even Verstappen himself, because he said over radio, I've lost power. And then you see him lifting through turn three, you think, and you know, has a Red Bull engine gone pop
here
again?
Here we go again, yeah.
Yeah, precisely. But actually, it was another Red Bull fault, and one they have had before last year, but the DRS didn't open down the main straight. A couple of other protagonists, I think the Haas guys in particular, also had the same problem. But a bit like Verstappen did when he still took pole in Zandvoort, as he thumbed it, it's not open, and sort of down a medium length straight, like at Spain, like at Zandvoort, it's about 0.3. So, you know, by the time he's turning into, well, I imagine, you know, by the time he's going into turn one, he's, you know, braking and realise he's got much less speed to scrub off. You know, the game's over. But, you know, the inverse to Leclerc, his first banker lap in Q3 was mega, the fastest lap of the weekend at that point. So, you know, still enough to get second, but a bit of a distant one.
Looking at the long run pace, you did the analysis obviously on Friday for autosport.com, crunching the numbers, and it does seem to be working in Red Bull's favour, similar to Miami, where yeah, they were behind Ferrari in qualifying, and then come the race, they were in a league of their own, really. George Russell, he spoke after qualifying and said that, look, I think Red Bull are going to run away with it. I think Max is just a step ahead, basically. From the numbers you looked at, does that tally?
It did when I was doing my numbers on Friday night, absolutely. So, you know, the long run pace, Verstappen was incredibly consistent, and his average lap was sort of a 1:26 flat, whereas Leclerc was nearly 0.7 adrift of that as the main charge on a comparative run. But there are, of course, always nuances to it. First one being that Verstappen sort of woke up on Saturday morning, and Red Bull put him on a qualifying specific program in FP3 to really sort of tweak the setup to get the one lap pace, thinking we've got a bit in hand here, we can go for the one lap pace. And that's come as Ferrari in FP3. No, they did long runs again to sort of, because they realised, yeah, damn it, we're so far behind with our long run pace compared to Ferrari. And like in Imola, like in Miami, we've got this real tyre degradation issue. So we need to focus on that. So there's been that offset from both teams that, you know, Ferrari have focused on their race pace this morning. Verstappen's focus, or Red Bull have focused on the one lap pace. They've converged there. And then you've got the other elements of, are these cars actually easier to overtake? This will be a good litmus test at a difficult track. And, you know, that importance of pole position. So, and I suppose if you want to go a step further, we've had bad starts from Verstappen and Leclerc and Sainz this year. So, you know, I suppose I'm not sitting on the fence. I'm not paid to say this, but it's a good race to tune in. We were wandering back to the hire car this evening. No decent car parking antics like an Imola, Luke, but we were walking back and I had to sort of turn around and said, actually, I'm fairly excited for tomorrow. There's you know, the data at the end of Friday night, I thought, well, right, I can start writing my race report now, in effect. But it's really sort of changed at the end of Saturday.
Yeah, it should be very interesting indeed. And the other factor to consider in that, for the first time really this year, is Mercedes. They seem to be back in the picture, maybe not right up there fighting for race wins and pole positions, but after such a miserable start to the season, so many struggles with this porpoising problem that's blighted George Russell and Lewis Hamilton so much, the upgrades they bought to Barcelona appear to have worked. Both drivers said they're no longer bouncing along the straights, so that's great. Bouncing through the corners still, but they can feel more grip. Basically, they can run the car lower, so that helps with the ground effects, obviously. It does look like Mercedes have taken a big step forward. Is this the start of the Mercedes remontada, which was the name of Barcelona's great comeback against PSG, probably a stone's throw away from where we are staying right now. Are they back?
I'm not going to go that far, but I think there's a heck of a lot more reason to be more confident than when Russell did that sort of halo time in Miami FP2 and thought, right, yeah, here we go. They're, you know, back at the top, and they're sandbagging in so far in the early part of the season. And there's several reasons for that. One is, like you say, the drivers are happy, which they weren't. They came away from Miami going, you know, or that practice session going, well, the times are quick, but we have no idea why, because I'm still feeling the same sort of bouncing sensation in the car. Whereas we've come here, they've got the upgrades. And this is a track, obviously, they have a huge data set from pre-season testing in the, although it's not officially called this, the A-spec car as opposed to the B-spec car. And, that, you know, they can see where the upgrades have helped. Only bouncing in turns 3 and 9, which are the higher speed corners here, and obviously a bit of a slow average speed. And I think, as well, the long run pace certainly puts Russell sort of between the Red Bulls and Ferraris. Mercedes having had this sort of damage limitation so far this season, where they've really been a distant third and actually falling down in the super times between like Alpine and McLaren. They've always sort of hung on to that third. Now they could be a second. And I think they could have probably qualified a bit better. Their sort of racing driver excuse, if you like, is that the Haas cars in particular, having both been fined, were really slow out of the pit lane because, well, you know, such scorching temperatures, they're trying to preserve their tyre life. But Russell and Hamilton's argument is, well, they didn't respect the delta. So we've followed our plan. They've gone too slowly. So we've been hobbled by their dirty air, and our tyres have overheated before we've even set a lap. So they think there is time left on the table. So fourth and sixth, I think, is the best team qualifying performance of the season. Could have been perhaps third and the fourth.
Well, that's what George Russell said after. He said we didn't get the tyres in that right window, and that third could have been possible had we hooked everything up. So I think it speaks volumes that after such a positive day on the face of things, even then they're still going, yeah, there's still time to find though. Lewis Hamilton, he was more upbeat, but he said, like, I still don't understand why I'm losing out to George, like where I am. He said, I'm still not comfortable with the car. The rear, he said, I was particularly where I am struggling. So definitely work for the seven-time world champion to do. Looking at the race tomorrow, George Russell, he reckons Mercedes could be in with the fight with Ferrari, which, given Ferrari on pole, is quite a good omen. He also said he reckons it's going to be a, quote, chaotic race because of the tyre deck, and that's going to be so decisive. Look, again, looking at the times, Mercedes, Ferrari, could that be a fight that we see play out tomorrow?
I think so. So again, to refer back to this sort of long run data that spent a lot of time looking at on Friday night, the lap times are, the spread of the Mercedes is a lot sort of narrower. They're sort of the high 25s, low 26s, whereas the Ferraris in practice, they were in the good 25s, then ended up well into the 27s. So there's a much bigger spread. And as I mentioned, you know, they have done this FP3 thing to focus on their long run pace. But we've also got the thing a few people are speaking to today saying, actually, the soft tire might be a good race tire here. But the other school of thought is, if you stick to that, go, it's a good race tire and it's, you know, a lot faster than the mediums. Three, four stops, to use Russell's exact phrase, it could be quite chaotic, and it'll be one of those, you know, obviously we're very privileged to be here covering Formula One, but I'm a bit worried about tomorrow. It's going to be a hard race to follow, to sum up. I think it might be quite a bit bitty, and, you know, that sort of the good one where potentially the winner is only revealed sort of in the final 10 laps.
That's kind of what we want, isn't it? We want to see those kind of races where it's maybe the pitch is a bit clouded, but I remember, was it Canada 2010, where everyone was on different strategies and it wasn't until the very end you worked out. And that's, I think, when F1 realised, oh shoot, if we have really like super quickly degrading tyres, we're onto a winner here. So I think, yeah, it could be really exciting. I think as we were walking out and chatting about sort of possibilities, and I said, oh, there could be a four-stop strategy to win it tomorrow or something. And I think, yeah, it's an exciting picture, which for Barcelona is not something you would normally be saying.
Exactly. I do think we sort of need it, because the way Sainz described it is, you know, these cars are better at following, but it's an offset. So Spain isn't now an easy track to overtake, but instead of being insanely difficult to overtake at, it's now very difficult and a medium difficulty track, and now a slightly easier track. So there is an offset. But what the same driver, Sainz, was saying at the end of play is, actually, I think now temperatures are too hot that we're going to almost be in a 2021 situation where Saturn dirty air, the tyres going to be overheating at the best of times. So even though we've had the reduction in the dirty air, there's still going to be enough there for the rubber to go, yeah, no thanks, don't really fancy that. And then having that delta, that pace in abundance to overtake the car in front, perhaps it will be a bit of a tidied affair, and we'll be done nice and early tomorrow, Luke, if that's
Joyce,
the case.
That would be a pleasure in many ways, but obviously we do want the best possible race we can see. One team that's been in the news a lot and been on autosport.com a lot so far this weekend is Aston Martin and the green Red Bull and all of sort of the backlash from that. Red Bull saying, Helmut Marko said it's an unbelievable copy that Aston Martin produced. FIA checked it and cleared it. Red Bull are now focused on their own internal investigation to make sure there's been no leak of IP or anything. So it's been a real case that it does seem maybe a bit of a storm in a teacup, maybe something's going to run, but it's definitely the first big political drama, I think, this year. But the green Red Bull, it didn't deliver this kind of big step forward we expected. Both Aston Martins dropped out in Q1. Were you surprised to see them not advance even through the first session?
I think naturally you expect them to take a step forward, and considering, you know, particularly we're coming away from testing going, you know, you could throw a blanket over sort of everyone ahead of Williams but behind sort of Mercedes, and you know, you really, the midfield so tightly compact that any update could really swing that order. So you expect them to take a step forward, even though they have been sort of really below par. But I think, you know, it comes back to, they have introduced a wholesale new-looking car here, you know, potentially different philosophy, how much of it they, you know, they say they've been working on it since November, and this concept has been worked in tandem with the original spec car since launch. But now they're putting their, basically, theory into practice. They're having to learn a new car. So while their long-run pace, again, was good, When they switched it over to one lap stuff, the balance went, and I think perhaps it just comes from a lack of understanding. So you had that situation where I think it was, you know, Vettel was on the threshold, and then Ricciardo and I think it was Gasly improved late on to drop him and Fernando Alonso out in Q3, and Sainz was much further back. So I think they go away to like both drivers having complained about the balance of the car, just going, perhaps you take the rough with the smooth. This is a rough part. We need to understand what unlocks this car, what makes it tick, and hopefully it'll pay dividends later on. But I suppose the flip side to that is, you know, same with Ferrari having bought upgrades for this race, but, you know, potentially falling behind Red Bull in the Grand Prix tomorrow, is that you kind of want them to work out the box, don't you, to give you that real step change, because we know Red Bull have got more to come, or Mercedes have seemingly had a really good step forward with your upgrade. That's the sort of desired effect. Aston Martin to go, well, we don't really understand this car so much now.
Now, one other person who was left disappointed after qualifying was Lando Norris, who would have made it through to Q3, only for his lap in Q2 to be deleted due to a track limits breach at turn 12. And he said after qualifying, I must be the first person ever to lose a lap time because of a track limits breach there. There are actually three drivers who lost a lap throughout the all of qualifying at that same point of the circuit. So yeah, it's left Lando out of the top 10. He's got a fight back to do tomorrow. He said he's been struggling a bit this weekend, not feeling too well, a bit under the weather, battling a bit of a cold. He said it's definitely not COVID, and just a disclaimer for anyone listening thinking, oh, Luke seems a bit bunged up, I think I've picked something up, but having just tested, not COVID, so that's all good. But with Lando, he was pretty frustrated about that track limits breach, that being deleted. And it does come back, I guess, to the white line versus gravel debate, doesn't it? And the purists would say, well, no, the gravel, that's it, that should be where the limit is. F1 race control this year have been quite firm in saying, no, the white line is the edge of the track. If you go over it, that's it. Where do you sit on that debate?
Well, I think what's plain to see so far this year, whether it's the jewellery or whatever, it's this new Premiership. It can't be this year, after the bitter taste left in everyone's mouth after Abu Dhabi and basically them turning around, well, you don't understand it, dear fans. This is your fault in a way. It absolutely cannot be with this new Premiership. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. They're really trying to distance themselves. And that comes by almost being a bit draconian in the application of the laws. You know, this is over the mark. And there's that sort of weird sort of almost contradiction where we'll let drivers self-police, but in this area we're going to be really, really stricter and stricter. And I sort of side with Lando and sort of the school of thought. It was only a marginal violation at the best time. I mean, I having known he had his lap time deleted, I then rewatched the lap and I was like, oh, it's still very marginal. Like, you really have to be tuned into that. And I don't want to sort of, you know, compare it to Alonso calling the steward in sort of incompetent on Friday, which was an amazing bit of amazing coming out from Fernando Alonso. Just sort of, he really was. I asked him a sort of, I know it's a slight tangent, but I asked him a fairly like simple and open question about the Indy 500. I was like, oh, he's in a bit of a foul mood. And then you teed him up nicely. It's like, oh, this is why he's in a bad mood. He ain't happy. But anyway, I think it's just that sort of thing of potentially needless. I know it's this thing about still early in the season, you want to set precedents and this will be held up in a driver's briefing later on, go, this was allowed, this wasn't. But when you've got a gravel trap there, and we've seen how much sort of, you know, these cars running wide, how much it can damage them. That's why Gasly missed so much of FP2, having run wide. And it's also why Norris had a new chassis for today, because he ran wide. So in some areas, with these cars running so low and so stiff, exceeding track limits can, with a gravel on the outside or a big sausage cup, they're sort of self-policing. So yeah, maybe a bit too much this one.
Yeah, definitely a debate that's going to go on, I think, on the stewarding front. Fernando Alonso today as well said he had quite an animated chat with FIA President Mohamed Ben Saliem on Friday, but apparently no apologies or anything like that. Just continue this conversation. So that's a story that's going to run and run. But in the meantime, it is the Spanish Grand Prix tomorrow. It's going to be, I think, a very interesting race. I know Spain, it's not known for being the most thrilling track in the world, the most thrilling race, but with the tyre deck being so high, with the heat being so high as well, I think it's going to be a more interesting one than usual, hopefully. And perhaps the latest installment of this great fight between Leclerc and Verstappen at the start of the season. Matt, thank you very much for joining me. I think we're going to go off and find some dinner somewhere in Barcelona. So sure, find some tapas or something suitably themed. But in the meantime, make sure you please join us for tomorrow's post-race recap. We'll have the full podcast going through everything that happened in the Spanish Grand Prix, all of the big talking points. And of course, stay tuned to autosport.com tomorrow, because we'll have the live blog as usual through the race and all of the news and analysis from the track. We will see you tomorrow.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Sports Social Podcast Network.